So this week, we have a great show of autumn eating. Mushrooms, Dory Greenspan talks to us about butter, and we even get into the ever-controversial pumpkin spice. But first, I want to talk about two of the most exciting things I've tasted this year. One was a cedar tea, literally cedar branches steeped in water, and the other was just a nut, a pinon nut that was creamy and buttery, and even right out of the shell, it tasted like it had already been candied. Chef Sean Sherman brought them for me here in the studio, and they were so exciting because they tasted totally new. But these foods are not new. They're just part of a tradition of Native American food that's been hidden from sight, nearly hunted to extinction by forced migration and industrial food and shame. Now, Sean calls himself the Sioux Chef. That's S-I-O-U-X. And he's on a mission to bring Native foods to the fore and to instill pride in Native cooks. Sean's written a book, The Sioux Chef's Indigenous Kitchen, and we sat down to talk about what's gone into his journey. So, hey, Chef, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So I would love to start from the beginning with you.
Okay.
You grew up on a reservation in South Dakota.
Yeah, Pine Ridge Reservation.
Yeah, so tell me about growing up there and what you were eating.
Well, Pine Ridge Reservation itself sits in south central South Dakota. It's really wide open and vast. It's almost deserty because it's right on the edge of the Badlands, so there's a lot of cactus and there's a lot of desert plants around. There was a lot of coyotes, there was a lot of rattlesnakes and bull snakes, things like that. And, you know, we didn't really have a lot of the traditional foods growing up. We definitely had a lot of commodity foods. We definitely did hunt, so we did have some antelope and some venison and some goose and some duck on occasion, lots of pheasant and grouse. And we did pick things like chokecherries and timsala, which is the wild prairie turnip, juniper berries. But, you know, looking backwards as a chef much later in life, I realized there should have been a lot more knowledge of the traditional foods of the Lakota. And that's kind of what kind of set me off on the path, was really trying to figure out just the food of my own heritage.
Yeah. So you came from the reservation and you eventually got a job quite young cooking in restaurants, and you cooked for over 20 years. You were well into your career as a chef before you decided to focus on researching indigenous foods and in some cases the foods of your heritage, but the foods of indigenous people around the country, North America in general. What inspired this sort of mid-career change in your focus then?
Well, I'd say I was a few years into my official chef career in Minneapolis, and I was learning lots of different styles, from all over the world. And it just kind of hit me once. You know, it was when I was living down in Mexico that it really became apparent, and it felt like an epiphany kind of moment where I saw the path of trying to understand the indigenous foods of, first off, just Lakota, of where I grew up. And really trying to dig backwards and, you know, realizing that I needed that knowledge of wild plants. I needed the knowledge of agriculture and food preservation. And, you know, it just kind of set me on that path of trying to figure all those different pieces out. To this point today, where we are looking at North America as a whole through all the different indigenous communities from the tip of Mexico all the way up through Alaska, you know, the whole picture of it. So it's pretty exciting to think about. But looking backwards, when I first kind of had that epiphany, I realized that there wasn't a lot of information out there and there was no representation, hardly. Mm-hmm. There was a few restaurants that really tried and did well, like Loretta Barrett Odin's restaurant and a few other people like Lois Ellen Frank.
Where are they?
They're in the Southwest.
Okay.
And I just, you know, really wanted to, you know, further it and really try to make food that was as authentic as possible and just digging through all of it with a culinary sense of trying to put it all back together.
Yeah. It must be so hard to learn about the past when, in a lot of ways, as you said, as you grew up in your family, there wasn't a whole body of knowledge, of traditional knowledge that you knew of. That somewhere along the line, those traditions had been dissipated or maybe were sort of cut off. And in a situation where you are looking at Native foods in a place where Native people often were removed from the land where they, you know, where they developed their traditions and where a lot of their history wasn't written down, how do you find the truth of the past?
Part of it was just really researching the food. So I felt like the plants really had a lot of the story to tell. So really getting to know nature and the plants and how the indigenous communities were utilizing the wild plants around them, not only for food, but for medicine and for crafting and just daily life in general. But, you know, for me, I'm not trying to dig all the way back to 1491 to pre-Columbian. You know, I was really just digging to, you know, how were Lakota eating before they were influenced by another culture? So that doesn't go that far backwards when you think about it, because for my family line, my grandparents were the first generation of kids to go through boarding schools on Pine Ridge Reservation. And my great-grandparents' era were, they were still growing up on the plains with the Lakota, as they always had, and still maintained a lot of their indigenous food systems at that point. So it's only looking back a few generations, really. But because of the oppression and because of the way things went, relocating and moving, you know, Lakota around and, you know, placing them in a place where they weren't used to staying, you know, all year round, it was tough to try to piece it back together. So talking to lots of elders and also just looking at other parts of the country, how other people are doing things, because there's varying degrees of different tribes that have more or less of their food systems intact, and, you know, realizing there's a lot of commonalities with it out there too.
Yeah. And so what is the food you're cooking today? What are some of the ingredients in the dishes that are important?
So we really just like to focus on region. As we travel around, we've been able to travel across the U.S. and Canada, and we really just like to think about where we are when we're there, and we think about the season, we think about the history of the people that were living there before, and we try to bring out that authenticity of those areas, because there's so much diversity. You know, when you look at the indigenous map of North America, you just see so much diversity. It changes, you know, religion and culture and beliefs and food every, you know, few hundred miles. And it's exciting to explore in a culinary sense, because there's just so much food out there that we haven't been utilizing.
Yeah. But as a chef, there are lots of things that would be common in restaurant kitchens that you don't use, right?
Yeah. Well, we've tried to cut out anything that wasn't here before. So we've cut out, you know, main things like dairy, wheat flour, processed sugar, beef, pork, chicken, and really look at the wild foods that are around and the flavors that are there. If there was indigenous agriculture in those regions, what kind of varietals are there, and if they're still around, and looking at all the fish and the birds and the animals and, you know, the techniques that people would have utilized to produce these foods and creating something new with them. So we're not trying to do a timepiece. We're actually just rebuilding the pantries and then doing some new things with it. And, you know, the food becomes extremely beautiful and simple and healthy and just the simple presentations that they are.
Yeah, and you brought a few things with you. So this is a cedar maple tea.
Yep, and that was our main beverage for the Tatanka truck food truck when we opened it up. Since we weren't selling any sodas or Gatorades or anything like that, we were, you know, just using simple tea. So just cedar bough and maple, and we have that recipe in the cookbook. And it's just simple and healthy and delicious.
Oh, it's delicious. It tastes... Yeah. When you say cedar, I don't think of... But it has this sort of piney, almost junipery sort of flavor, very light.
Yeah, it's very light and sweet. It tastes like camping.
Yeah, it totally tastes like camping. Oh my God, that's beautiful. And you have some a few other things. You have these nuts.
Yep, we have some of the pinon pine nuts that come from the Southwest. And those are, you know, a little bit of a tougher shell, but they're really sweet on the inside. They're almost honey sweet.
Yeah, crazy. It's almost like it's candied inside the shell already.
Yeah.
And they're
like
super sort of creamy.
Yep. And it's a big deal to go out harvesting those in that part of the States.
Amazing. And you have some of these wild herbs as well.
Yep. There's some Labrador, which is also known as swamp tea, which grows heavily all throughout here. And there's some dried apple blossom, which is a sweet and tangy. And there's some Ocotillo blossom from the Southwest. Again, that's kind of tangy. We just kind of look at a lot of these wild herbs and we try to grab them while they're in season. It's fun that we get to trade some of these flavors with other people around different parts of the country too. So we have some diversity to play with.
Yeah, for sure. And so let me ask you I think most people don't know much about what you might call Native American food to begin with. But if you do bring it up, if there is an item that people think of, it's usually fry bread.
Right.
But you don't make fry bread.
Nope, we didn't see any point in it. I mean, I grew up with fry bread, and it tastes great, but it kind of is everything that, you know, isn't Native American food in the sense of really digging backwards. You know, so since we removed flour, you know, that's pretty much the bulk of it. And we look at the origins of fry bread, and it really, you know, is coming from it's coming from the army, basically. It's, you know, showing people, you know, how to make a very simple staple out of flour and lard and salt and sugar. You know, I deep fry it in a pan. And it was widely used, but there's no reason that fry bread should be like the go-to piece for every single indigenous community across North America, because there's just so much awesome diversity and there's so much more to learn. And, you know, even though fry bread tastes good and it's been integrated into the cultures, there's just so much more knowledge out there.
Yeah. And you brought this other thing that I'd love to try now. This is, can you describe this little bite I'm about to try?
Yep. So that's just amaranth cooked down and dried out into a cracker. So it's just light and sweet and crisp. And there is some cedar braised rabbit. And then we caramelized it with a little bit of maple sugar. And it's got a little piece of nasturtium on top and a little bit of the wojapi, which is just a mixed berry sauce. So just a simple bite, but a bunch of flavor.
Yeah, let me try this. Wow, that's awesome. I love that. I love how crunchy that amaranth gets. You said you just cooked it down and then...
Yeah, just almost like a polenta, you know, just cook it mm-hmm. in just very simple, some water and just a tiny touch of maple and just cooked it till it's thick. And then we just formed it, ran it through a dehydrator, and the next day it's perfect little crackers.
Yeah, it's so crunchy and you get that little bit of that earthiness from the amaranth, I'm sure from the rabbit as well, and all that maple sugar is very mild, but it tastes like the woods. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really tastes like the woods, and there's... That little bit of nasturtium gives it a pepperiness, even though you're not using black pepper that was brought here by the Europeans. So what an amazing treat to get to taste that, but also to think about how this is telling a different story of Native American food. This is not the Indian taco. This isn't fried bread. This is going back to these flavors that existed before Europeans came to this country and doing something new with them. This is amazing. Thank you, Chef.
Yeah, thank you very much.
John Sherman is the author of The Sous Chef's Indigenous Kitchen. You can find his recipe for maple juniper roast pheasant and for that delicious cedar tea we were drinking on our website, splendidtable.org. You know, when Sean and I were chatting, he talked a little bit about fry bread and why he doesn't make it. But in his book, he alludes to the controversy around fry bread in Native communities. So it starts with its history, right? Sean writes that when the federal government forced natives off the lands they knew and put them onto reservations, people lost control of their food. They put them in totally different environments, so they no longer knew what grows well or where to hunt or fish or forage, so they started to rely on commodity foods like white flour and powdered milk and lard, and fry bread is the result of that pantry. Native cooks figured they could mix up a dough, boil it in oil, and you have a crispy, chewy thing that keeps you full, and so it became a staple. Now, Sean and many others see it as a terrible staple. It's got tons of fat and calories and almost no other nutrients, and they see that diabetes and obesity are widespread in their communities. There's a native musician named Keith Sekela who sings, "Fry breads killed more Indians than the federal government." But at the same time, I remember years ago watching the movie Smoke Signals by the writer Sherman Alexie, and one of the main characters wears a shirt that says, "Fry bread power." And Alexie calls fry bread the story of our survival. And so it's also a symbol of ingenuity and perseverance. And all I could think about after talking to Sean was that cultures by nature love their foods. But how strange and hard it must be if the staple food of your culture leaves you feeling so conflicted.